Democracy's Basement to your ears. This is the weekly meeting of the Queen City Improvement Bureau. Each week, the dedicated staff of the Bureau meet to file reports, make recommendations, and survive on water that drips from the boiler pipes into our open mouths as we sleep on a bed of dot matrix printer paper in the back room. Maybe one day we'll escape from this subterranean basement, but until that day comes, this city is not going to improve itself. So, here we stay, improving things. This meeting is now in session.
Hello.
Oh, yes. What? Hello. Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Sorry, a little sleepy.
Are you? How come?
Well, I was thinking, remember last week we talked about Madam Web?
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that I didn't tell you something really important.
Oh,
like
no.
Vital information about Madam Web that you need to know and that has been keeping me awake, so that hence my sleepiness.
Okay, what was it?
Madam Web, her web connects them all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All of whom? Are we in the web?
We might well be.
Oh, no.
So, anyway. No,
I don't think that's a web I want to be in. From what you told me,
probably
I haven't rushed out to see it, by the way.
You're missing out. Her web could connect you all.
It is at Midnight Cinema.
Is it really?
Yeah, in Golden Mile.
All right, yeah, Moonlight. Is it Moonlight Cinema? Is that the name
Moonlight,
of it?
Moonlight, yes.
Yeah. Not to promote businesses in a meeting, but hey.
Second run cinemas. The city needs them. I fully support.
They need them like live theater. They need them like people need a live performance of the Queen City Improvement Bureau.
Oh, yeah.
During the Cathedral Village Arts Festival.
We will be. We will be live on Wednesday night.
Yes.
At the Cathedral Village Arts Festival.
And at the Artesian.
Yeah.
Do we know what time?
We think it might be 8 o'clock, but things are still in motion.
Right. So people have some supper.
Yep.
And then come see us. And then go away.
And this will be an actual live show, not like our other live shows where we've like shown up at a place, did a show for record and you couldn't actually hear us.
No, we're going to be on stage.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing crowd work.
We will.
I thought you'd say no.
No. You're going to be doing crowd work.
Okay.
I'm going to hide under the desk.
I'll do the crowd work. All right, shall we?
We should.
Okay. So I'll take attendance.
Okay.
First attendee, Puce Helland.
Nope.
What?
Nope, there's no Puce Helland here. Nope.
Maybe Helland Puce.
No.
No? Are the walls the color of Helland Puce?
Oh, yeah. No, everything in here is Puce.
Oh, nice. Okay,
yeah,
I like it.
With, like, taupe trim.
Oh, you know what? I know why Puce Helland isn't here.
Why?
Covered in Helland Puce. I've mixed up the letters in the name.
Oh, no.
So it should be, just a sec, just Paul Duchesne.
That's me.
Oh, great. Okay, so you're here. And we have a second attendee, Mango Darnia.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
No.
I heard something about Mango Darnia.
No.
His web connects us all.
Really?
Yes.
Mango Darnia.
Yes.
Is it
yes.
a web of mango?
Yes. It's like a tasty version of Madam Web.
Nice.
I know. I thought so, too.
Right. Rice?
On rice, yes. Yeah, it's and some syrup.
Yeah.
And a little cobwebby.
Oh.
Tasting still. Less. And, you know, you have it while you're watching Madam Web.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. Or any other, like, C-tier superhero movie.
Yeah.
You know, this is embarrassing. I've mixed up the letters in the name.
Oh, no.
It should be Aidan Morgan.
Wow, twice in one day.
I know.
Yeah, that's unusual. You, by the way.
And but I think it's a good hit rate.
Yeah.
For failure.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Excellent. So should we get the meeting started?
We should.
Okay.
We have something weird going on today.
What's weird around here?
There's a third person down here.
Shh. That is a little weird. It's been a while since a third person.
A very long time.
Has come down to this basement.
There's been a whole pandemic since the last time we had a third person in here.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's why, because it wiped everybody out.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Who's here?
I do believe we have Laura Pfeiffer from the city of Regina to report on like how people have rebuilt society outside since the pandemic.
Yeah, I thought I'd come down, see how you guys are doing from upstairs.
Yeah? Thank you. Nobody else has.
Is this a performance review? The last one we had did not go so well.
Yeah, it's your performance development evaluation.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And?
Well, this is the first one for the year, so we'll check back at the end of the year and see how you're doing.
Okay, I like that. Okay. Yeah. I feel like the sword of Damocles has been sort of like raised up a little bit. So it's good. Yeah.
Well, while we got you here, I was wondering if you could answer some questions for us, because we've been hearing some like crazy rumors down here in the sub-basement. We have heard that the city has got a big windfall of like $35.2 million from the federal government to like support housing initiatives in the city of Regina. And that there have been a whole bunch of like bylaw changes and stuff that have even like happened. Things like promoting density and getting rid of parking minimums.
Sigh.
Yeah. Things that we've been hoping for years and have never happened have just like all happened just in the last little while. Is this true? Yes or no?
I mean, I'm happy to report that it is true. Or at least, you know, the work is progressing on it.
Yeah. I should actually also ask, what is your job title? So that people don't think you're just like some weirdo wandering onto a mic.
Yeah, so as you said, my name is Laura Pfeiffer, and I'm the manager of city revitalization and planning and development services at the city.
Wow, I can't believe you're slumming down here.
Acting manager, okay?
Oh, okay, okay, so that makes more sense.
Yeah, just, you know, for clarity.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess phase one passed not too long ago, and that would have been the bylaw changes that, well, actually, maybe you should run through. What were the bylaw changes that were achieved in this, like, first wave of stuff?
Sure. So, I mean, maybe just to start off, you know, we're talking about the Housing Accelerator Fund, which is a federal program for cities to access funding to advance the development of housing in their cities. And the program is essentially set up to encourage cities to look at the things they control that impact how housing is developed and look at ways that they can either change their processes, change bylaws, things like that to support additional housing development to meet, you know, address, I should say, the national housing crisis. Mm-hmm. So for the city of Regina, you know, we applied to the funding last year and created an action plan that includes a series of initiatives that we'll undertake to support additional housing development. And within that is a program that my branch is running called Expanding Citywide Housing Options, which is the, you know, initiatives related to bylaw changes and planning policy changes that would support additional housing to be built. So that's maybe the, you know, the bigger context to start with. And like you said, we're working on bringing that work forward in phases. You know, it's five different initiatives that are addressing various aspects of planning policy. So things like encouraging higher density in the downtown, supporting housing development near transit, encouraging more diverse housing options within neighborhoods, things like that. So that's kind of the, you know, the scope of the work. So, you know, trying to advance that much policy, you know, it makes sense to bring it forward in phases. Mm-hmm. So, as you said, phase one was passed by council in January. And that was kind of the first big piece of work, I would say, which was looking at permitting additional housing units to be built on every residential lot in the city. So, you know, prior to that, those changes being passed by council within the city's intensification boundary, I would say, you know, 90% of residential land was low density residential and still is. Yeah. It's still.
And that's like single family homes.
Yeah, it's like 1 to 2 units is what it would permit.
And typically one, though.
Well, I mean, based on historical development patterns, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of one unit buildings.
Yeah.
But increasingly, you know, I'll get to that in a minute. I was going to say, I actually, there's an amazing amount of housing diversity in the city. But you're right, a lot of low density areas. And so, you know, again, within 90% of that land area, you could only build out up to 2 units. And so the changes that council passed in January were to allow up to 4 units to be built on all of those lots. An increase in height permissions for zones that would already permit mixed use and multi-unit residential development. So, you know, we're already zoned for apartments and things like that. So increasing how high those apartments could go. And then changing parking requirements in the city to recommendations as opposed to requirements in the zoning bylaw.
Right.
Yeah. So that was, again, like a pretty dramatic amount of work.
Yeah.
But, you know, very much in line with the action plan that we prepared for the federal government and additional direction that was provided by council in November.
Right. What were your favorites that were passed?
More units?
More units.
Well, I mean, actually, height permissions are kind of mine because as people who know me know one thing about me, it's that I'm extremely tall.
Right.
So I need those height permissions.
You need that extra meter.
Yeah, because sometimes I'll be walking down the street and the cops will say, sorry, you're too tall. And they'll try to arrest me, but they can't because they can't fit me in the car because I'm just too tall. So they just shake their fists sternly at me and send me on my way. So, and I'm tired of being hassled by police for being approximately 7'3".
Right.
So, and not 5'4", as my doctor told me I was.
So thank you for that.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I was like, I think for me, I was impressed that both parking minimums and increased density on lots, like, passed all at once after, you know, even like last year, that was a non-starter at council. So to see that change was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting shift in the way that we're doing things to address a really important issue. And I think that seeing some of the recent changes in the city with increasing population over the last couple of years, like pretty dramatically year over year, and seeing a really dramatic drop in vacancy rates has provided some context, I think, to acknowledge that doing things on a really small kind of piecemeal basis isn't necessarily going to address, you know, the issue. And so it is, it's a bit of a pivot for council to consider how do we address these things at a citywide level as opposed to kind of going area by area.
Yeah. Now, who's the person who's in charge of the development? Above Autumn to Autumn.
Like the deputy city manager of community planning and or city planning and community development.
Thank you.
Deb Bryden.
Yeah. So I remember Deb Bryden. When this stuff was coming forward, she happened to mention that city staff are excited by the scope of work that they're undertaking. So I just wanted to ask you about, like, for years and years and years, you hear about these, like, new urbanist ideas that are, like, percolating in the society. You don't see them coming up at or getting very far at council. Hmm. And now these are all happening. Have you guys been chomping at the bit to do this kind of work? Like, is this exciting for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, when you look at the city's official community plan, it lays out a really solid vision for growth in the city, right? And I would say it's similar to other cities in Canada. You start with, you know, your highest densities tend to be central, or you want them to be central, and you want them to be located near transit and things like that, and you want to have those housing options. And I think the official community plan speaks to that and that vision of it. And like every city in Canada, this is not a Regina problem. It's a challenge to do that. It's a challenge to actually implement what a vision is. It's easy to say that you want the ideal of something or like what you're trying to get to, and it's really difficult to make it happen. And, you know, that Regina is no different. We've had challenges trying to hit our intensification goals and things like that. And part of that is just based on market demand. Part of that is based on the types of regulations that we put in place to allow things to happen. And so I think, you know, any time that a planner gets to start advancing important work that is going to make a difference in how the city grows and develops and how things change, particularly when you know that it is so strongly aligned with, you know, with the outcomes you're trying to, of course it's exciting.
Cool. We're on 91.3 FM, CJTR, Regina Community Radio. We're the Queen City Improvement Bureau talking with Laura Pfeiffer about the Housing Accelerator Fund and all the stuff that's happening because of it. Well, what do you say to the people, okay, now that these changes are starting to happen, and, I mean, we haven't actually seen, like, the first, you know, fourplex built in, you know, a single-family home neighborhood, but it could conceivably come. What do you tell to people who are concerned or, like, scared by the potential of that development?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, change is hard, you know, For cities across Canada that are doing this work, it's new. You know, there's no way to know how something is going to play out until you start to do it. And, you know, we've made a commitment through all of these initiatives that we'll continue to monitor things as they applications come in and see what it actually looks like. And so I get it. I understand that, you know, the things that people are used to might look different. You know, the way that the city was 30 years ago is also not the way the city is today. And so, and the, you know, the demographics of our residents is different, and the needs of people for housing is different. And so I think it's a process, right, of navigating change over time. And we know that cities change over time. And so it's trying to figure out a way to do that in a way that, again, provides flexibility and options to meet the needs of residents, but it's not mandating it. Mm-hmm. So in any of these low density neighborhoods, you can still build a single family home. There's nothing that says, you know, a redevelopment of a site has to have four units on it. It just provides the flexibility to allow for it. And I'd say the other piece that we were mindful to retain at the moment is that any development standard we have in a low density neighborhood, so a height, a maximum height, a maximum, you know, setbacks and things like, we always kind of call it like the box. Like, what can you fit in the box if you were to build something? That's not changing. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to build a four-unit building or a three-unit building that still would meet the same requirements as a single-family home, you know, that's okay by us.
Right. And that limits how many units you can pack into a space if the envelope of the building is, you know, a certain size. You can't fit, like, eight units into a bungalow shape.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess you could.
Well, I was going to say, you know, like, there's certainly limits. And I would say, even honestly, until we do a really deep dive on the city's development standards, that may be a limiting factor. That you know, how can you actually fit full units into what we would currently allow? But at the moment, the number of units is not the holdback, or at least up to four. That's not the issue.
Right.
Yeah.
What about the utilities problem? Because that was something that came up. I think there's like even a mention in the mayor's accelerating housing motion about permitting up to four units or whatever, respecting, you know, the capacity of the utilities. Especially in like older neighborhoods and central neighborhoods where they're hoping to see a lot of this densification happen. Do you guys at City Hall have a sense of how limited developers will be because of the infrastructure? Like, will you not be able to put a four-unit place on a, because the water infrastructure just isn't big enough?
Yeah, I'd say we're getting better at understanding that. So the city is undertaking some servicing studies right now to understand across the city, you know, where is their capacity, where is there maybe limited capacity, things like that. That'll help us provide some guidance. You know, we always talk about how nice it would be to have a map that just has like a green light, a red light to kind of show these areas could, you know, would be able to accommodate additional development. So maybe focus your efforts here. And so that's something that, you know, colleagues in servicing and infrastructure are working on. I think there's also an interesting consideration that when you look at the demographics of our neighborhoods and see that over time a lot of neighborhoods have lost population over time, it may indicate that there's, you know, would be some latent capacity there. I you know, those servicing studies would be able to actually, like, you know, dig into the data and know that. But but you're right. Part of that motion that was passed by council in November was that, you know, directing administration to make changes to the bylaws for things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every project is a go if the servicing capacity isn't there for it. That's kind of a given when reviewing development.
Right.
And we all know, I mean, that utilities are just, they're overrated.
Really?
Yeah, just like they're hyped up. People are all like, they think they want water and electricity and stuff like that, but what they really want... No, they want water and electricity. I have nowhere to go with that.
No. I think they want more streaming services.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They want like better bandwidth.
Yeah.
They want Netflix.
Yeah, if you got everybody Crave, they could live without sewer, I'm pretty sure.
That's right.
Free Crave. Have you considered that?
No. Oh. No, the city doesn't provide that utility, so, you know, that's...
Okay. We'll write a report.
That's right. HBO versus Squalor.
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to get that on the next executive committee agenda.
They'll be looking at the agenda going, what? How did this get on here? How do those people on the radio get this on?
Pulse Duluth? Who the hell is that? Okay, so this week some more stuff came to executive committee. And that was the stuff with the, it was the first wave of transit and what is it called? The primary intensification area that you've defined. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So again, this is kind of a second phase of work to support the city's action plan, which had an initiative to support mid and high density development near transit. Okay. And then in the motion that was passed by council in November, there was some additional specificity provided in that. So council directed that we would allow multi-unit buildings up to 6 stories in height within 200 meters of main transit routes. And then additional, I think, 4-story buildings within 800 meters of main transit.
Right.
And permitting that to happen. So this report, you're right, kind of tackles that 200-meter piece.
So the 6 stories.
The 6 stories, right. Yeah. And so one of the things that we had identified when looking at the various city policies and things like that is that we had, I would say, like 90% alignment between our policy documents. So the official community plan that was passed in 2013 or 14 identifies express transit corridors and, I'm going to mess up my terminology here, I think it's nodes, transit nodes. And then as you look at things like the transportation master plan, they pretty much align together with the OCP. But then last year or the year before when the Regina Transit Master Plan was passed, they had identified the main transit routes and transit hubs. And the main transit routes are intended to transition to bus rapid transit over time. So again, 90% alignment between where those routes were, where those hubs were, but there were a few little things that would need to be changed to align those all together. And we made some recommendations to make some tweaks to it, mostly adjusting one route that goes through North Central to align it with Fifth Avenue, which is the local kind of commercial strip in North Central, mm-hmm. and making sure that you've got transit still operating on that street. So that was kind of the first main piece of work that needed to be done, was make sure every document is identifying the same thing if we're all, going to deliver on this together. And then we created walk sheds, they're called. So once you've got those routes mapped, you map a walking distance of 200 meters from those routes to identify what properties are actually within 200 meters. And that varies a lot throughout the city. You can think about a route on, let's say, Albert Street, where it's, there's a grid street network, so it's really easy to map 200 meters from that. But when you start looking out to Arcola East, which is identified in the future as, a main transit route, a bus is not going to stop on the side of Arcola. There's nowhere for people to get off, Mm-hmm. So those areas were a little bit more challenging to figure out, do you start mm-hmm. identifying where a bus could stop when it hasn't been determined yet? So there's a little bit of, analysis that needed to go into that to create, as you said, these primary intensification areas. So that creates kind of an overarching policy area in the official plan to identify, again, if we have it in our growth plan saying we want density along transit, this starts to give some specificity. What does that look like?
Right.
And then creating overarching policies that would allow multi-unit development up to 6 stories within those primary intensification areas.
Right. And so the people can kind of visualize it at home. We're kind of talking about like a line that runs down Albert Street and creates like sort of like a blue bulge.
Yeah.
200 meters from Albert Street and then again along Vic, I think.
Yeah, kind of like Vic East on Dewdney Avenue going west, a little bit down like Wascana Parkway.
Yeah.
And then there's a few other areas like out to Gordon Road. There's some pieces that kind of weave up through the northwest.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's all on the, there's a website on Be Heard Regina.
Yeah. Regina.ca/housing options.
Okay.
And you can see the Be Heard page, get access to the reports and things like that.
Cool. And what comes next? Is there a secondary intensification area?
I mean, I don't know if we're going to call it that at this point. I mean, you'd think so. If there's primary intensification areas, maybe there's secondary intensification areas.
It's the coolest name. Well, no, there are cool.
But
I'd like to suggest,
that report's not written yet, so.
I would like to suggest primary intensification area 2, electric boogaloo.
Very nice.
I'll take it back for
Thank
consideration.
You. Thank you.
Too primary, too intensification.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I like that too.
But you're right. There will need to be some additional edits to that map as we go, yeah. Because we know that there's also the direction to allow four-story development in more areas right. that have access to transit as well.
Cool. I guess we've got just a couple of minutes left here, and I wanted to ask, why should we think that this is going to work? Like, why should we think this is going to, that we're actually going to see, like, intensification and housing get built through this whole process? What assurances can you give us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't give you any 100% assurances. I think there's kind of a couple pieces to it. Again, the first is about providing flexibility, right? Like, yeah. We understand today that while many people may want a single-family home, they can't afford a single-family home. We understand that people may want to age in their communities and they don't have an opportunity to do that. So providing the flexibility to deliver what the market can actually handle is important. You know, I think when we all think back to kind of the early 2010s-ish or so, when the city's vacancy rate dropped below 1%, it was a really big issue. And it takes a long time to move a development process to try and address what that issue is. So it's always best if you have that flexibility built in. So as those things start to change, the market is actually able to respond and build the type of housing that people can access. I mean, you know, we've seen across Canada a drop in single family home development because it's really expensive to do. It's becoming more challenging and there's a smaller market of people that can afford a brand new single family house. So you see a lot of townhouses, you see a lot of duplexes, multi-unit buildings. But that's important as far as, like, you know, why we should care and what do we think it's going to deliver on. And then I think the other piece of it that, you know, we've heard over the last few years from council and from, you know, stakeholders that there's all these barriers to intensification. You know, we talk about it is just more complex to build in a built context than a greenfield context. There's other buildings around that you need to take into consideration. There's servicing capacity issues, things like that, and uncertainty that comes with it. The other piece of it is political uncertainty. You know, it can be a long process to bring something forward through a discretionary use or a rezoning process. And if you don't actually know you're going to get a yes at the end of it, it can stifle a lot of projects coming forward. And so I think providing that certainty, you know, provides the opportunity for projects to start coming forward. And we may start seeing the type of development that we haven't in the last, you know, 5-10 years, because now there is that level of certainty that the city has an appetite to support it in a more tangible way than just kind of from a broad policy perspective.
Nice. So do you know of any, like, projects? Any, you got the inside dope on any, like, fourplexes coming?
Ooh.
You know what? I don't have any when it comes to fourplexes specifically. No. Though there's a lot of inquiries to the city to ask questions, to understand what the changes mean, how they work, things like that. I've seen a couple of projects benefit from the flexibility with parking, and they're not dramatic, but just, you know, a building needed to have a slightly larger setback, so getting rid of 2 or 3 parking spaces allows them to now meet that requirement. So that, again, the flexibility just helps make projects pencil out, as the development community would say.
Awesome. Well, that's what counts for hot goss at the Queen City Improvement Bureau. Thanks a lot for coming in, Laura.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. This is awesome. Okay, well, we should probably go to
Innovative Revenue Tools.
Okay. And we're back on the Queen City Improvement Bureau.
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Oh, dandy.
Yeah?
Dandy.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it.
So, I really enjoyed the entire interview.
Yeah?
But I can't help but feel that our interviewee did not mention what the primary purpose of the Housing Accelerator Fund was about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interviewee.
Which was... I feel like perhaps even maybe would not have dodged this question, but I mean, it's the Accelerator Fund. Clearly, the fund is meant to strap giant engines to houses so they can accelerate.
Yes.
Up and down Albert Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just cruise back, you know.
Right.
Because the kids need something to do. They need to turn their houses into giant jalopies.
Yeah.
that they can take down to the malt shop or just park in front of the ledge building.
And if they're driving fast enough and hit enough people, housing crisis solved.
Exactly. I also have a solution to the transit problem.
What's that?
Well, what you'll notice when you look at the city, there's a lot of empty space, parking lots. But if you look even sort of more closely, you realize that the particles that make up, you know, matter in the city are largely empty space, just charged emptiness.
Yeah.
Just held with, you know, strong and weak nuclear forces.
Right. And the space is getting bigger every day.
Exactly. So if we just remove some of the charge, we collapse that space, and the city becomes approximately a cubic meter in size.
Right.
And then you can just walk everywhere.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
But if we need more space for housing, could we then just flip the switch the other way, blow the city up, build the housing, and then pack it all down again?
We could, except when we take up more space, you know, we might bump Moose Jaw. And they are they might regard that as, you know, a casus belli.
Yeah,
and declare crumpy war against us, as they have wanted to for years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't let that happen.
No. We need to maintain the fragile peace.
Yes. Hey, so other stuff happened.
It did.
Old council.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Tell us.
But this is...
us? What am I talking about? Tell me.
Okay. This is perhaps, like, I think it may end up being an even more contentious, because I think the Housing Accelerator Fund is not yet contentious, but I think it's going to be that there are going to be people, especially when a report comes forward saying we're changing neighborhood plans to accommodate these new densities.
Yes.
I think you're going to see some NIMBY response to that. But we are already starting to see some response to Vision Zero came forward to executive committee. And this is a sort of framework that a lot of cities have implemented. It started in 1997 in Sweden. And it's basically a way to sort of like flip the way you look at a city and traffic planning so that instead of saying, oh, well, you know, a certain number of people are going to die every year from traffic, we're going to like say, no, that's not acceptable. And we're going to change everything about the way we do traffic planning so that people are not going to die. And we're bringing that to council, or sorry, to City Hall and to the city of Regina. And this has been in the works for about a year or two now. And the framework came forward, but along with it came a decision to declare the entire cathedral area as a community safety zone. And the primary effect of that will be that they're going to reduce the speed limits from 50 kilometers per hour throughout Cathedral to 30 kilometers per hour throughout Cathedral, including Victoria Avenue and 13th Avenue.
Okay.
This went to executive committee and passed in a 7-3 vote. So Vision Zero got like unanimously endorsed, and then the 30 kilometers in Cathedral ended up getting a 7-3 win, which is gigantic.
Well, I see a problem, at least for me personally.
Sure.
I love going out and just racing as fast as I can down 13th Avenue, preferably, you know, around rush hour, so I can try to strike as many pedestrians as possible.
Yeah.
Because I feel that is my right.
Yeah, but I keep telling you this, you're doing this on foot, and you're just knocking people over. You're also a pedestrian.
Right.
You just knock people over and you're just annoying people.
But I say vroom vroom. Like, they should know I'm a car.
I know.
Like, it's the most frustrating thing, and I'm a little embarrassed that you pointed it out. But
I'm sorry, but nobody's fooled by your t-shirt that says I'm going 100.
Also, I am a Hummer.
Yes.
Yes.
On the back. Yeah. you are a Hummer.
Yeah, there's been several charges brought against me already, just like a general nuisance complaint.
I think, we joke, and yet a couple of people have died on 13th Avenue in the last year.
I
think that's why they were singled out as the start of this community safety zone. I wanted to play, I've got like a 4-minute, 24-second clip here.
All right.
This is Councillor Andrew Stevens, Ward 3. He's the councillor for the ward. He was, I sensed that he was pushing for this, that he was supported this, and he was backing this recommendation from administration. Administration noted that they had considered bringing forward the 30-kilometer thing in 2025, and mm-hmm. they decided that, you know, the data is clear that this will save lives, and so there's no reason to delay it.
I mean, I believe it's almost quantifiable. You can sort of say for yeah. every decrease, you know, in speed, you et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought we should play this because this is Councillor Stevens asking questions of administration about like their rationale, why they're doing this. We get some of the responses from administration, and it's all fairly, it gives a pretty good sense of how the discussion went at executive committee that day.
The traditional approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, if we're thinking about the people who plan our streets, the traffic engineers, the predominant idea here is that there's collateral damage and we just accept it. People will die on our roads. And then what we're, and this is what I'm asking to be clear, Vision Zero is, no, it's not acceptable. Zero is the vision, much like our WCB commitment with Mission Zero, which is, no, we don't accept anyone dying on the job. And that means there's a culture shift in our organization as well as in the community. Would that be a fair assessment of big picture what we're trying to achieve here?
Through you, the chair, that's correct.
Okay. I'd like to know, like internally, I'm seeing a massive shift. So before it seemed to be, so long as the traffic's flowing, I earn my 77 seconds, you know, someone gets hit, we'll live with it. What is changing internally? I'm seeing a change, but I wonder if you can comment. What triggered the thoughts of senior leaders and rank and file folks in the city to say, we need to really reflect, change how we make decisions on this file as well as how the community thinks about it? What triggered that?
Through the chair, I'll ask the team to provide the background of Vision Zero and how we got to this point, because it is a big change.
Through the chair, I think there were numerous factors, obviously, that went into that. But to identify some major factors, I think it was feedback from our residents. Obviously, whether it's city administration, whether it's RPS, we have to handle the requests that come in when people have lost a loved one. And it was challenging to try and tell people to their face that that was an inevitable outcome of a transportation system that moves vehicles efficiently. And when we look at other jurisdictions, we see that they've been successful in actually bringing those down. And so looking at what's been successful and wanting to replicate that here so that we don't have to continue to have those conversations with residents.
Thank you. Not infrequently when we have this conversation, whether it's in school zones or elsewhere, the traffic deaths are inevitable constituency comes out. And that's my worry, is that's the public opinion that hasn't been heard yet. And I don't need to hear it anymore. It's the blame of the cyclist and the pedestrian. When I'm going through your data, I'm seeing something else. So, and this would be a question for administration, but also Sergeant Gordon. In incidents involving pedestrians and cyclists, we know based on the data that you're likely just going to die, right? So if you're getting involved in an accident, you're probably dead. Who is to blame in these cases? Is it the casual person walking out, or is there something else going on that we can attribute to the driving patterns and the motorists themselves?
Through the chair, I'll start with that. So the mindset that we're trying to shift under Vision Zero clearly says that humans make mistakes. And so when they make mistakes, we don't want that to be a fatality. And so the comment about being hit by a vehicle means you're going to die. At 50 kilometers or higher, yes, that's what it means. If you reduce that, then there's a chance of survival. So that's the shift that we're trying to make.
I have no interest in referring this. Man, I'll take 1,000 angry calls because someone has to go 30 rather than taking calls about people dying. So public engagement at the same time as
important. All right, so that was Councillor Stevens' questions
mm-hmm.
regarding Vision Zero and the 30 kilometers per hour in Cathedral. And I thought it was interesting that we heard some of the ways in which it isn't just a question of, you know, like saving saving pedestrians or saving cyclists. It's also, you know, saving drivers from making a mistake and having to live with having, you know, killed somebody because they had a moment of inattention. And it's also saving first responders and city staff from having to live with those repercussions of our traffic planning. So,
and everybody was very happy with what Stephen said, and nobody wanted to refer it back to administration.
Well, yeah, no.
Oh, wow. I was surprised. I thought I was just guessing what obviously would happen. Like who would get up and say, I prefer the possibility of dead people over the inconvenience of some drivers.
Do you want to play city council hangman? You can guess like a letter.
Hangman, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, how appropriate. Well, it's not Stevens.
No.
Not Nelson.
Is there an H? Yeah, there's
an
H.
Does it rhyme with Schmalkens by any chance?
It does.
Oh.
Yeah. He's objecting to the way that the data was used. One of the things that administration said was that they've looked at the data. This has been implemented in cities around the world and has always had massive success.
Right.
Edmonton instituted 40 kilometers per hour in all their residential neighborhoods across the city just in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already seen a 39% decline in injury and death in their city. And this is just, you know, I can't remember how many years ago this was implemented, but it was very recent. So this is something that the data is on the side of the people who are pro Vision Zero, pro reducing speed limits. Councillor Hawkins, however, he raised some concerns.
And as I've listened this afternoon, I wish that I hadn't been a lawyer at all living in a world of uncertainty. I wish that I'd been an engineer who knew for sure what the answer was, who had a God, and the God was data. And that caused me some discomfort. As I sat here this afternoon, I thought, maybe I should have been an engineer. But then I thought about data a little more, and I realized that there are gaps in data, that there are always holes in data. The data collection can be incomplete. I realized that there's bias in data collection, which has to be striven to be beaten and overcome. That you always need to talk to more than one expert. I realized that data always ran up against whether it's actual data or whether it's simply ad hoc information. And finally, most importantly of all, I thought, data has no answers at all. Data has to be interpreted. Data does not interpret itself. And so I thought maybe, engineers felt occasionally a little bit of uncertainty. In this discussion, there are gaps in the data. As we've gone along this morning, we saw that we weren't sure what caused various specific accidents, which are frequently cited. We realized, and perhaps this is most important, that there are causation problems with data. Think of the bar graphs that you saw. Large amounts of data information were set out in categories. So you looked at the categories and you said to yourself, well, was it speed? Or was it drugs? Or was the night dark? Or what? Or were the tires bald? Or what was it? So that there are causation problems. And then this. Data won't really help you sort out your priorities. So when we're designing Mission Zero, do we start by reducing speed limits? Or do we start by traffic calming measures Or do we start in one area and not another? Where do we start? And the data has difficult suggestions with respect to that, but no answers.
So that was Councillor Hawkins. And he was at this point bringing forward a referral motion that ended up failing. So,
you know, Paul, I enjoy sports games.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
You?
Yes. I enjoy a game of sports.
Yes. Well, you are 7'3".
So I am 7'3", so yes, and not 5'4".
Yeah.
Please stop. I'm a 7'3" Humvee driving down 13th. But that's neither here nor there. But when I'm watching a game of sports, let's say soccer, and one team is winning, and I realize when they kick the ball through the goal, I think, what if I take those goalposts and I just move them? I just move them on down. Yeah. Then the goal didn't happen. See, there are gaps between what the actual results are and what I insist on thinking they should be.
That's true. Goals are kind of arbitrary.
Exactly. So why should I have to accept the results of a sports game when it's possible in some weird fantasy in my head that these things could be changed around?
Yeah.
Because there's the gaps just... I don't want, like, you know, the rules to be like the god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm unclear. Which would you prefer... Which do you wish you would have been then, a lawyer or an engineer?
It's hard to say. I would like to be. I wish I were an engineer, playing sports, and then like running and just moving the goals whenever the goal I wanted just didn't happen,
and take the other team to court.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe referring the result back to the whatever governing body.
Yeah.
There is.
I have a theory.
Oh, do you?
Yes. Yeah.
Please share.
My theory is that at no point during that executive committee meeting did Councillor Hawkins ever want to be an engineer. I think he was always quite happy to be a lawyer.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a bit of a rhetorical gambit.
Yeah.
And I also feel that when you have like a host of different causes, but there's one particular overwhelming physical fact behind these deaths, which involves the speed limits, it seems to me the handiest possible solution, whether or not a pedestrian was on speed, you know, or on the drugs, and thereby clearly the cause of the whole thing, and not the innocent driver. We still have to deal with, we sometimes have to deal with the actual facts on the ground rather than implied judgments about these pedestrians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or about the drivers. We just know it works.
Yeah. I also find it interesting how deeply Councillor Hawkins likes to interrogate a notion like data.
Mm-hmm.
When he's offended by a lowered speed limit, and yet when the data is saying a downtown arena is going to make us billions of dollars in spin-off benefits, and we've just been told this by a black box from a consultant that gets paid a lot of money to tell cities that,
right.
He's a lot more sort of willing to accept the data in those situations.
Well, it's an arena, and he likes a sports game. He wishes he were a sports game person.
Yeah. Well, he is 7 foot three.
He is 7 foot three.
Yeah.
He is me. I am Hawkins. This is the sound of a mask coming off.
Oh, yeah. Please don't ever do that again.
Okay.
Yeah. You scared me there for a second, but I thought Hawkins has been watching me this whole time.
That's right. There was some uncomfortable tugging at my face there, too. Well, we've had him on the show.
A couple of times.
Yeah. And he's been a very game guest, I thought.
Oh yeah, he's a delightful guest. Yeah. And he's like he's willing to, you know, like a lawyer, he's willing to argue anything from any side.
Yes, as we're hearing on this.
Yeah.
Sorry, I think that was a bit of. I thought that would be amusing to hear, but it was not amusing to hear.
Yeah.
I, Yeah. I found it pretty distressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Because we're starting to see, one of the things I noticed on social media is in the lead up to this meeting, people were extremely supportive of it. If you go on to things like the Regina Cathedral Neighborhood Facebook group, or Reddit, there was a lot of people saying, this is great, this is long overdue, I live in Cathedral, and 50 kilometers per hour is way too fast. A lot of stories of, you know, like yanking your kids back from a corner because you were worried they're about to get hit by a car speeding by. That has, now that this has passed, just so like within the last like couple of days, that's completely changed. I still think on balance, the number of people who are saying they support this is the largest number. But that group that Councillor Stevens alluded to, the, you know, we have to accept some deaths constituency, they've started to come out and they're starting to say things like, you know, well, if there wasn't all this jaywalking, if there weren't all these people running out into the street, we need more pedestrian education. We don't need to lower the speed limits.
What we need are better traffic controls on 13th to go along with a reduced speed limit.
Yeah.
We need extended curbs. We
yeah.
need proper traffic lights. We don't need, through what is a probably one of the most beautiful neighborhoods in the city, we don't need a Strode just cutting through
right.
it, frankly.
Yep.
But that's just my... That's just my hot take on the matter.
One thing I found was interesting, and I think this is something that I hope will work together well. There was an issue that's been raised is the idea of like people who are passing through Cathedral on 13th will like see it as a viable place to stop. So even if you know they're not like every day after work, they're pulling into the Safeway parking lot or you know stopping to get. Crystals at a warehouse books Ooh. That by traveling through it as a thoroughfare that they see it as a viable place to go and it just keeps it you know top of mind. One of the goals stated goals with the Vision Zero and the Community Safety Zone is to make Cathedral more of a destination and to put cars on the roads that are made for through traffic like Saskatchewan Drive. There is a danger that this could lead to fewer people passing through 13th and less of that business traffic. The way that you fix that, though, is with increased density of housing. One of the things that happened in the last year is, I think it was on the order of about 200 people fewer in Cathedral, maybe just over 100 fewer people in Cathedral year over year. And when you look at the density, say, like 60 years back in Cathedral to where it is now, like it's a much less dense neighborhood. There are a lot fewer people living there. Even with like along Ray Street, there are all those like, you know, low rise apartment buildings that have gone up. Mm-hmm. There's still like fewer people living there than there were in its heyday. I think one of the things that I'm hoping we'll see in Cathedral over the next few years with this housing accelerator stuff is that a lot of that we'll see some of that density come back and that walking traffic, because one of the things that even with, you know, fit people barreling down at 50 kilometers per hour, the businesses along 13th really need more walking traffic. They really need more local traffic. So the Holy Rosary School is shutting down and it's going to be demolished. And the Catholic School Board building, which they're adjacent. The park to the west of those is going to be retained, and that's where the Arts Festival has their big top. But where the school building was and where the school board building are, those are going to go. And I've heard some rumblings in the community that they don't want to see this get turned into high-density housing. But I think that's a perfect spot for like a 4 or 5-story low-rise apartment building, some like even condos, like rental apartments, like just something to increase the density in that area. This is like those would all be customers for Desart Suites.
Sure.
Right? And
But unless they're the wrong kind of people.
Right.
The ones who don't shop at Desart.
Yeah.
The ones who...
People who hate sweets.
The ones who jaywalk.
Yeah.
Yes, and just crowd up the streets with their bodies.
All
yes.
they want are broccoli. No sweets for these people. Yeah, but I mean, that is the concern, right? That you're going to have like pushback if something like that comes forward. So hopefully this will just be something that with the housing accelerator stuff will just be allowed. But we'll see. Because right now, I don't know. I don't even know if that lot has been sold yet, the Holy Rosary. So,
Well, we shall see.
Yeah. Because this is the last school year for Holy Rosary School. So, you know, I'm also curious because I've heard that the Gales building on 13th has also been sold.
Okay.
And that is also another prime location where you could put like a four-story with like, or five-story with like ground floor retail. You
definitely could. Because that
some
building,
apartments there.
If you notice, a lot of those buildings on 13th, they do not look very pretty.
No.
I mean, they look like they're kind of just held together with baling wire.
Yeah.
Some of them.
And you want, like, even the landlords that I know, not landlords, the people who run the businesses, they don't own the buildings, and they know the state these buildings are in, and in a lot of cases, it isn't the best. And, yeah, I mean, I think there's also the danger of, like, if new buildings get put in, they're going to put in retail on the ground floor that's too big and too expensive for anybody, to, you know, in the neighborhood to rent. But I don't know. I'm extremely hopeful about this. I mean, if anybody's, like, walk down 15th Avenue with kids on the way to Connaught School can tell you the people driving along there, even though there are two four-way stops,
mm-hmm.
the speed of traffic along that street,
it's
absurd. And there's no gap between sidewalk and traffic sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, hey, we're almost out of time, aren't we?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess in that case, should we move to adjourn?
We should 100% move to adjourn.
Okay, meeting adjourned. You've been listening to the Queen City Improvement Bureau on 91.3 FM, CGN into the community. That's Regina Community Radio. We are broadcast from 7 to 8 p.m. Thursdays. We broadcast Monday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. Your hosts are Paul DeShannon and Aidan Morgan. Our guest today was Laura Pfeiffer from the City of Regina. That's just upstairs from us, obviously. Also, Ryan Hill, a.k.a. Guidewire, and thank you for the theme music, as always. Just a reminder, Theater Village Arts Festival, we will be live on Wednesday night from the Artesian. Coming up next, we've got The Record Room, a.k.a. The Patrick Hour, and then music all on through the night. That's it. Keep on bullying, Regina.